You're listening to PodcastJuice.net.
Podcast Juice is working it like a job and we need your help. Check out our crowdsourcing campaign over on Indiegogo. Details are on PodcastJuice.net. Remember, work it like a job and let's take this thing to the next level. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Podcast Juice. This is Geeked Out. My name is Michael Dean. Welcome today. We got a special, special show today. We got a special guest, actually, so we're going to introduce him first. We have Mr. Tawala Sharp. Sir, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. I'm very good. How y'all doing today?
Doing great, man. It's a Sunday morning. We're having our service right now.
So this right on.
Well, amen. Tawala, before I get to the rest of the round table and guys that's always here, can you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
Long-time radio maven. I've been in radio now 20 years. I started at a station in Los Angeles that was known as 92.3 The Beat before it made the transition to becoming 100.3 The Beat. And finally, it was V100 when it turned to an urban adult station. But for the longest time, 92 and 100.3 The Beat was the only urban mainstream on the entire West Coast, which made it a pretty powerful station. I mean, we were responsible for pretty much 100% of any urban music sold on the West Coast. Now I am a producer at radio station KFI AM 640, formerly the Rush Limbaugh station. Now it is, more into news talk. But, we're trying to, like, I guess, shake off the Rush Limbaugh stigma and let people know, like, hey, everyone on the station doesn't hate Obama.
Wow. So that's curious. So were these people that used to listen to Rush and then the format changed and were they like, what are these people on the radio station talking about?
It's interesting because Rush Limbaugh is such a polarizing figure in radio with his message and just everything mm-hmm. that he discusses that it got to the point where people thought just if you were on that station that you agreed with him
right.
or that you sided with him. And as a station, they were like, well, Rush is the only person who feels this way on the air. Like John and Ken and Bill Handel and Bill Carroll and everyone else on the air, they don't really, subscribe to this train of thought. So they made the decision to basically give Rush his own station. So KEIB, AM 1150 or AM, whatever it is, KEIB is where they moved Rush and along with Sean Hannity and all the others who go on their Obama tirades every
wow.
day.
That's a cold.
And now, KFI is now able to, appeal to a wider and broader audience now because people are saying, wow, okay, you guys do talk about different things. You guys do not just sit up and try to destroy the Democratic Party, through Obama.
Yeah. So a little more diversity, I guess, on the station. All right.
I guess diversity in opinions, yes.
There you go. All right. Well, cool. Thank you. Welcome, sir. It's a pleasure to
Thank
have you,
you
on
very
here.
Much.
All right. Next up, we have Mr. Ampu. How are you, sir? Ampu. He's apparently has muted his mic or disappeared. He's scared. Say he's scared. Next up, we'll come back to him. Mr. Q-Storm, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm easy on Sunday morning. Easy like Sunday morning, sorry.
All right. Get it right now.
Revoke my card.
You're going, you we'll take your Lionel card, but you can keep his hairdo. How about that?
Damn.
All right. Ann Poole, sounds like you're back.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I got a hard 1 o'clock stop so I can go attend service unlike you heathens.
Oh. Excuse me, sir. Amen. All right. Last but certainly not least, he's our legal voice, the big voice, big sexy and sack. How are you doing, sir?
Gentlemen, I'm doing well on a Sunday morning. My felony trial is starting to come together. And this one may have some media coverage, so I'll let you guys know.
Now, just to be clear, because on Tawala, I'm like, what the hell am I doing on this show? He's the lawyer. He's not the actual. Not the one in trouble. So we're going to put that
it's
out.
It's all good. I can dig it.
All right. So today, on a Sunday morning, this is very interesting now that I think about what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about homophobia in the black community.
Is the black community more homophobic? It's hard for me to say the word for some reason.
We know you're not anti-gay.
Wow. Well,
can't even say it.
Here's the thing. One, I want to know is, do we feel like there's more of this in our, you know, black community? What types, if there is it any more than anybody else? I will say this. I think that I tend to see a lot more focus of the black community's homophobia, if there is or isn't. But it seems to be a lot of people talking about this. You know, one of the things I think is bringing it into the news today is the Lee Daniels show, Empire. And I think he's even quoted as saying, you know, I want to blow the lid off of black homophobia. I don't know how true or not that situation is, but I wanted to see you guys' viewpoints. So what I wanted to start with Mr. Tawala himself.
Well, I wanted to give some background as to why we had Mr. Sharp on the show. I was listening to the Mo Kelly show last Saturday, AM 640 KFI, and they were mentioning the Kevin Hart interview that he had with the Breakfast Club, where he was asked if he would ever do a gay role, and he gave some let's say controversial comments where he said that he respects and appreciates everything that the gay community does, but he's not doing a lot of stuff in the draft. He was speaking about the Tropic Thunder script that he was offered the role that went to Brandon T. Jackson, and he said that he wouldn't accept the part because there was a lot of stuff in the draft that he read, and that it was real flagrant were the words he was saying. Mo Kelly and Tawala said, I think he meant flamboyant, but that's neither here nor there. And he stated that at this current point in time in his career, he doesn't believe that he has the acting ability to 100% commit to being playing a gay role, as some insecurities he might have with himself. And that led to Mo Kelly and Tawala's talk about the homophobia in the black community, which I had to take them to task on Twitter and state that that's just unfair. The black community isn't any more homophobic than any other community. And I feel that we're continued to be maligned for actions that were 10, 15, 20 years ago, which is a standard that's not being held to other communities who do far worse homophobic things today. And that's why we have him on the show.
And you know what? Mr. Mo Kelly himself just hit me and said, hey, I'm on Skype now. Get me in this conversation.
Uh-oh.
He is Mr. Mo Kelly. So if you want to dial him up, he's like, I'm on right now.
Okay.
Not now. Right now.
Right now.
Oh, Lord.
I will find him.
Find him. Bring him in.
Bring him in.
I told you, who's going to be line stepping today? I told you.
Well, while I got him coming, go ahead and if you want to reply back to Aunt Pooh there.
In our conversation, yes, Ampu is right. We took Kevin Hart to task, because we thought he was sidestepping the issue, because he did say, yes, you know, I'm not sure I'd have the acting chops per se to play a gay role. But before that, he prefaced it with saying, really, I'm worried about what people are going to say about me in my community, which we thought was that's pretty much what it is all about within the African-American community, especially the community which has supported Kevin Hart the most in the beginning of his career, i.e. the hip hop community. There is rampant homophobia. When you look at people like Butter, who is a famous, you know, MTV DJ who just came out. And he talked about how...
Oh, hold up. PJ Butter?
No, not PJ Butter. Oh. Butter is a personality in New York. He started MTV Jams, and right now he is the music director, I believe, for BET. But when he came out, his contention was, within the African-American community, the homophobia that I experienced when I first came out was shocking. And it's one of those things where he said, you know, I thought, you know, people accepting folks for being homosexual was like, you know, like the way to go. But he noticed that was more the case that he saw with friends that were white and homosexual versus friends that are black and in the closet, because they fear what will happen within their community, i.e. their church, you know, or just individuals, period. And he says, I'm not talking about just regular folks. He said, I know a lot of people in the entertainment industry who have hit me on the low to say, hey, man, I appreciate you coming out. That's real brave and bold. I wish I could do the same thing. And he's like, whoa, what? You know, why don't you? And he said, ah, oh, man, I can't have that. You know, what are people going to think about me? You know, people are going to turn on my music and all that. Like, you know, me and Mo know a very famous singer who is hands down homosexual, and he will not come out to save his life because of what people would think about him and the appeal to his music. Now, there are obvious that we're not, I wouldn't say obvious. I'll say there are people who we can say, yeah, yeah, that guy is gay, i.e. maybe Luther. But, you right, know, right. even for Luther, for all the times I've actually seen Luther hanging out with guys, I'm like, this guy still won't come out and just say, yeah, I'm gay. Why? Because within the African-American community, what do we hear growing up in church? Being gay is a sin. You're going to hell. That translated into our lives and what we do.
Okay, two things. One, let's not act like that's not in non-black churches. Two, who was Luther's biggest fan base? Black women. So you're trying to tell me that this singer, this crooner who sings all these love songs that appeal to black women, coming out as gay would not hurt his bottom line, well, his money, his career? So I think that speaks more not to him being ostracized from the black community, but him like, okay, much like this argument we had with Usher when he married that older woman, that if he comes out as gay, he's going to lose a huge amount of his fan base, because part of the appeal of Luther was believing he was singing those songs to those women. And if they know he's gay, they know he ain't singing to him. Thus, they're not going to be as into him and buying his music.
Well, with that, real quick, we have Mr. Mo Kelly has joined the show. Sir, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome, man. I'm hearing a lot about you. I follow you online, actually. I see all your posts and stuff. So very much a pleasure to come on. Let me let you jump in a little bit here. The conversation, we're talking about homophobia in the black community. Tawala has stated his case. And Pooh has stated his. I'm curious to hear what you got to say.
Mine is going to be very much in alignment with Tawala, if only because we both come from the music industry. I came from the label side, Tawala from the radio side. And to reiterate what Tawala was saying, I can list you a number of high-profile R&B singers who are gay, who specifically and explicitly refuse to come out, not only because it will affect sales, but they will also be shunned in a way that they would not be in other communities. We don't have the black equivalent of an Adam Lambert. We don't have it for a number of reasons, if only because we as a community have not gotten behind the idea of black musical artists or black entertainers specifically coming out and being gay in an explicit sense. Now, the other communities, they have those portions of the community who are actively promoting that, who are actively moving towards that legislation, but not in the African American community. And like Tawala said, it is tied back to the church. It is tied back to right. who we were taught growing up, and also the church's supreme influence on the black community in the way that other communities are not. Our leaders, quote unquote, came out of the civil rights movement, who came out of the church. So our leadership and the people who dictate our social ethics, more times than not, are directly related to the church. So if the church says homosexuality is a sin, we're going to shun you, at least if you come out publicly, then that sets the tone for everything else. And lastly, let me say this. We're the only community who specifically features homophobia in our art. In hip-hop music, you still hear it. In a lot of our TV shows, you still see it. Whereas any other group, that would be cause for boycotts. But it's almost acceptable within our community.
Well, you know, I would say, too, there are a lot of – well, obviously, we have Frank Ocean, right? I think he might be sort of the poster child for black R&B entertainer. He seems to be accepted. You know, he sort of comes from a quasi hip-hop / R&B world. I would think you'd be ostracized if you tried to say anything against him. That's my opinion, it seems.
But you
like.
Can name him. He's the singular. He is the
true.
Exception which
Very
proves
true.
The rule, as opposed to the multitude of of white entertainers who come out in all forms in terms of television media, in terms of recorded music, and also movies. There are too many to even number, but if you could only come up with Frank Ocean, and I can list you the top names of R&B singers of the past 20 years who are all explicitly gay in their lifestyles.
Well, sure, I can say there's, you know, there's Tevin Campbell when he came out, and I think he felt the sting of sort of when his thing was came out, right?
Oh, but wait, okay, I have to jump in there. I was at Warner Brothers Records, working at Warner Brothers Records when he was caught with that prostitute. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you the story and what happened behind the scenes. I got the call at 3:30 in the morning when they found him and they arrested him, and we had to get him out of jail, get him released. And the conversation at the record company was, we have to somehow make it that he was arrested for prostitution, but not let get out that he was with a male prostitute. And Tevin Campbell long battled as far as how he was going to publicly represent himself beyond the music. He was coming out of the black church as a singer. And he knew that there were other implications as far as his life, if his lifestyle came out having nothing to do with his singing career. And that's part of the reason why he got so caught up in the drugs and everything, trying to deal with the reality of who he was in the music industry and also the black community.
And I sympathize with that, with him. But then the joking part of me would say, if you had just put out a jam, would we have forgiven that? Like, well, if we can have guys that are peeing on girls and we forgive him because his music is so good, could we not say, you know what? I'm not saying he need to be forgiven for being gay, be clear. But, you know, I think of the other guy, and I think they may have been a couple at some point, Rashawn Patterson. Like, I don't know. To me, he seems like
Rashawn Patterson has not openly come out, even though, like Mo said,
he's kind of like a Luther.
A gay lifestyle.
He's kind of like a Luther. Like, I assume that's what it is. But I do think there is a resistance within the black community to formally accept traditional, I'm going to say traditional sort of men that we see in entertainment, you know, R&B singer, some actors, I think. But then again, there are other people that seem to play gay roles. And what's the guy that was on True Blood?
Nelson Ellis.
I don't know if he's
Lafayette.
Lafayette. Now, is he actually gay or not?
No, he is not.
Okay.
Then he has a wife, I believe.
Oh, we'll see. Me being a dummy, I'm like, damn. He's playing that pretty hard. I kind of assume that might be his style. But I do think there is a resistance. And does it come from some of the church? Probably so. But at the same point, I'm kind of like in 2015, I feel like it's all over the place. I feel like we see it all over the place. I think, you know, we see the extreme sides of gay or the cross-dressing thing, the cross-gender type of stuff. It seems to me that usually that's always a black face. That's the totem pole for that kind of stuff. So I don't know if it's white people doing that or we accept these characters. Or the, what's the guy from Orange is the New Black comes to my mind?
Well, we accept it in jest for the most part. Okay. We accept it when we're laughing at it. We accept it when it's Twan and Blaine on In Living Color where we laugh at it. We accept it when it's Shanaynay. Or we accept it when it's Wanda because we're usually laughing at it. Uh-huh. Even when you look at Frank Ocean, he said he was most hesitant to come out. Why? Because members of his own crew, the Odd Future Cats, they go ham when it comes to all types of homosexual slurs. That's one thing that they do. Every other thing is, you know, fag this, fag that. That is how that crew gets down. The crew that he comes from, almost every time they do a show, there is some gay bashing in their shows. So this is a guy who like, man, in my own crew, these guys are, you know, attacking my lifestyle. So that was one thing that he was like, this was like, well, I know when I come out, they're going to drive me from the crew. And surprisingly, the crew, they took that stance like, yeah, that's cool, man. That's you. You know, that's what you do.
Right.
But you have not seen him around his crew since coming out. You have not seen Tyler, the Creator, you know, jumping on Frank Ocean tracks anymore and vice versa since him coming out.
And plus, you got to think, Mike, all the vehicles that you mentioned there. And I'm also going back as far as like RuPaul and, you know, Flip Wilson even and all that type of stuff. It was all in the purview of the white media. You know what I'm saying? Like, you put it best. The first time we're seeing a gay character in a black, quote unquote, black vehicle, like Empire is Empire. That's the first. To use the word that Mr. Kelly just used, that is singular. But all those other vehicles is typically in the white media, which I do believe tends to is more accepting of the lifestyle than the black community is.
But something that that Mo and Twala brought up was they mentioned how this, for example, Tracy Morgan, they're playing the overly effeminate, flamboyant, flaming homosexual. And my reply to that was, who wrote that? That wasn't a black person who wrote that. That was Adam Sandler's people. And so, again, I feel like why is the black community being maligned because a black performer played this character that wasn't even written by a black person? And I think that that's an unfair accusation to throw at us.
Well, Big Sexy, I wanted you to jump in on the conversation. What do you have to think about this?
Well, first of all, we all know that I'm not a fan of Tracy Morgan.
Oh, boy.
So the character that he played or doesn't play, don't care. I have a background in music, you know, along the lines of Twala and Mr. Kelly. I used to be a roadie back in the day, and I did work with some R&B groups when they came through the Bay Area. And so I can see how, you know, a lot of people who were gay behind the scenes, it was no big deal. But they didn't want it to go public for whatever reason. Now, with Luther, it could affect his money. With Tevin Campbell, you know, and I said this when Graffiti Bridge came out. I'm like, he ain't fooling nobody.
Stop.
Am I but was I wrong?
No, oh, yeah, no, you're right.
See?
But he was fooling himself. He was coming to grips with it at that point because he was a child of the industry.
Fair enough.
Here's my question, and Mike, you tell me if I'm jumping ahead. I do tend to think that there's a little bit, there's more homophobia in the black community than other communities because of what Mr. Kelly pointed out. But here's my question. How is it, if we accept that, just for the sake of argument, how is it that people like Little Richard, I'll say Michael Jackson, I'll say Prince,
watch it,
were very effeminate, and you would think at first glance that they're either gay or bisexual? How do is it because they have such a penultimate talent that they get a pass?
I don't think it's like, a question of a pass.
Let me just say this real quick. You guys did an excellent review of the Chronic album. And I was looking at some of the videos just to remind myself of what the tracks sounded like on YouTube. And there were tons of references to, you know, you're going to have my, I'm going to put my, can we speak?
Dick in your mouth. Say it, man.
You're riding on my nuts. I'm going to put my dick in your mouth. There's a shot on, the first track? I can't remember the first track on the album in the video where, it's the Eazy-E clown bending over, and this fat dude comes up behind him, and it's obviously implied he is having anal sex with him. So it just seems like a weird dichotomy that we have this homophobia, yet we love putting ourselves in that position. I don't know if it's for the sake of the laughter or not, but I don't know how that works.
Again, I think it's because we love to degrade the homosexual community because it backs up the fear that's fostered in the church. Because if you think about it, you've got a church crowd who would tell you homosexuality is a sin and all that lifestyle is wrong. But that is the number one audience for who? Tyler Perry, who does what? Dresses up as a woman in his Madea character. That's kind of strange, don't you think?
Well, I think because it's the same church that has the choir director that we all know is, you know, funny, kind of gay. So he's in the church with them.
Well, to be fair, to back to Q's point about as far as the imagery that was being depicted in the rap, I think that wasn't more so as utilizing homosexuality and we're laughing at it. But I think overall, they use those imagery to demean another man. What's the worst thing you could tell from a man to a man? What's the worst thing you could tell him? Suck my dick. Slick my nuts, things of that nature, saying that you are less of a man by doing these type of acts.
But aren't you less of a man by letting him do that?
I agree with that. What? I think it was one of the stupidest thing I ever saw was 50 Cent calling Ja Rule a faggot and then said, come here, you little faggot, give me a kiss. I'm like, what?
You know,
who was the faggot?
Right. You know, a lot of it, too, at least I'm going to say personally for me, I have nothing, you know, I'm going to sound, I feel like a white person. I have black friends. I have nothing against. I have nothing against, or it doesn't even bother me if somebody said I'm gay or whatever. Yeah, I'm over that. I met somebody.
Unless it's a hot woman.
Funny. I have met this guy. He ended up becoming a mentor, business mentor of me, and he's a gay gentleman. And I was able to actually really spend a lot of time and meet him, understand, and it was very. He's a very interesting guy. And I look at him as I look at any heterosexual guy. It's like how a lot of heterosexual guys. Can we go hard for sex and we talk about it, think about it a lot. So a man that's gay is going to usually have the same sort of drive about it. And I get that. So it makes sense to me. I think for me though, the fear is that I have a fear. And this doesn't sound crazy. The fear of being raped or penetrated. And for some reason, when we think of gay, we think of, I'm talking about for men, it's always the sex part of it. Like, man, I can't imagine being that. I can't imagine having that done to me. That has nothing to do with the person and how they act and what they do. But I know a lot of times for me, it is usually the very extreme penetration fear and in the sex fear. I was watching the movie The Interview last night. I finally watched that last night. It's on Netflix, right? And I mean, the gay jokes and the penetration jokes and stuff was running rampant in that movie. I was like, these guys are crazy. But I was actually kind of like adjusting my seat on, I don't know if you've seen the movie, on certain parts, and I'm like, god damn, man. And my girlfriend was laughing. I was like, that's funny, but that's just a little too much for me, man. I was feeling uncomfortable, you know.
Can I jump in real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
I think part of the evidence of how the black community is, I'll say, relatively more homophobic than other communities is tied to that, because we as a community, not anyone in specific, but we as a community still view same-sex relationships through a sexualized lens.
Right.
It's always about, with no Vaseline, it's always about the sexual aspect of specifically two men being together. And we as a community are still behind the curve, that learning curve about the knowledge of these relationships as actual relationships and not boil them down to just that sexual act. And in our conversations within the church, in our conversations or the images that we put forth in movies, in our music videos, and the language that we use in our hip hop, it is always the sexualized boiling down to its smallest component that says to me that we're not as evolved on this issue as a community as others.
But I would also, I'm going to go to somebody else, but I also throw in to what you said is, I think we talk about sexualized stuff across the board. Like, we even sexualize our relationships with women, probably more so than we talk about. But it's always sort of the more common denominator. And I'm really speaking about today's hip hop, and R&B is thrown into that. There, you know, I mean, it's base level, and it's usually always about, you know, the big booty. You know, we focus more on the ass than the brain. I mean, but that's a man thing. But at the same point, we're always super sexualized. And I don't think it would be any different if it was about homosexual stuff, which we admit there is sort of a taboo about it. So I just think it's, unfortunately, we've always sort of been in that sort of realm. You know, we haven't rised above, not everybody, we haven't rised above dealing with the actual, or maybe emotional aspects of relationships. Do we see, some of us see relationships between men and women as purely sexual, right? There's no intimacy. It's just purely, I got to smash. You know, how many did you smash? Or from the back, front, you suck, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. I think we always get into that. Ampu, do you have something going on this?
Yeah. I don't have a rebuttal. I'll concede the floor on that.
All right. Go ahead.
Can I bring up the point? And I can't remember what year this was. I want to say, please correct me if I'm wrong. I want to say it was like between 2005 or 2009, somewhere in that area, where there was that vote in California. I forget the proposition it was, but it was to...
Always want to go to Prop 209. Just like coming to me, every time we talk about black homophobia, we want to go to 209.
Can't finish? Can I finish, please?
Go ahead, man.
We have guests. You wasn't raised in the barn, dude. Come on.
The shots are being fired. Go ahead.
Now, it's my understanding that AMPU has shown me facts when I brought this up that I'm incorrect. But it's my understanding that it was the black churches that came out in droves to push that referendum, I guess is the right word, away, to make that go away. Now, am I wrong about that? I mean, doesn't that clearly speak to a homophobia in the black community?
That's if you want to overlook Rick Warren's church, who Rick Warren is a prominent Anglo preacher, and if you want to overlook the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints, which is a Mormon, predominantly Anglo church.
But what does that have to do with this proposition specifically?
They were the main money backers of that, of getting that on the vote and pushing heavy with advertising to vote that way, to do away with same-sex marriage.
And what percentage of black voters went out to vote against it?
58%, I believe.
Which is a majority, is it not?
Not an overwhelming majority, as they like to report that it was 75% to 78%, which was totally inaccurate, yet still gets erroneously reported to this day.
You guys, you're missing some very important facts in here. First, black church is more important to black folks than white church is important to white folks. That's the first thing. And also during this Prop 209 debate, you had President George Bush specifically call some of the top black mega preachers together so he could get more support for the Defense of Marriage Act. And so these same mega preachers like Harry Jackson and other people, they went back to the black churches and specifically started pounding this issue and message about traditional marriage being between a man and a woman. That's all related and must be included in the discussion.
Now, to refute that, I would state that, so you're saying that George W. Bush, he got all these preachers in, these same preachers that couldn't get him to vote for him a couple of weeks later in the primary, as African-American turnout voted 85% for John Kerry. But these specific preachers were able to get them to defeat the Prop 209 and keep same-sex marriage as illegal.
That's an easier sell. It is easier to sell to black folks the idea of homosexuality is a sin and you're all going to hell, as opposed to, remember now, the pastors went back because they were getting greased by the Bush administration. It doesn't mean that message is also going to be transferred.
Fair note.
We brought up the black church a lot. I just want to ask this in general. Do we feel the black church today still holds the sway of the opinion, on a general level, to the black community?
Are you serious?
I don't believe it.
What? Yes.
I don't believe it.
Yes.
No. I say lesser, but yes.
What about you, Big Sexy?
I think it does. I mean, the impact is still there. But the problem is, and I've said this before, the problem is when you get into the black church as a whole, then it starts to get segmented and frayed into little sub-segments. And it's all about, and again, it's just my opinion, it's all about, you know, each minister or pastor saying, well, I feel X, so guess what? All y'all feel X. And it's not really about teaching or ministering people. It's all about that guy's agenda. So if you get the right minister on your page on the agenda, he'll bring his people with him.
Yeah. Is there also a fear of, you know, black people always say, I don't want to associate the homosexual, the gay struggle as it's on equal playing field of, say, the civil rights struggle, i.e. black struggle. Is that maybe another part of, you know, sort of, I do feel there's an agenda somewhat to push the gay stuff to the front, for better or for worse. But is there maybe a pushback from some black people that would be another sort of, you know, Captain America shield they hold up to say, well, this is why I'm not really trying to support this, because I don't want you to think that this is the same. We don't stand the same. But I'm curious what you guys think about that.
I have some very strong opinions about that.
Don't you?
Well, number one, I guess I don't understand why people get so incensed when you say it's the same, the gay, the LGBT struggle is the same as the African-American struggle during the civil rights era. I don't know why people get so incensed about it. We can talk about it and maybe debate about it, but people really get upset about that. I don't understand why. I could see the point being made both ways. But here's my thing. I personally think that when you look at the statistics in the black community overall, not specifically necessarily, but overall, anecdotal, and to some degree, hard facts and statistics, I sincerely believe we have squandered the legacy of the civil rights era.
Squandered, or maybe it was squelched.
No, it was squandered.
No. Squandered. Let me be clear. Squandered. And maybe we cannot deal with the fact that there is another contingent of people out there that are picking up the, not to be funny here, but they're picking up the flag where we dropped it. And we're just embarrassed because they are making things happen. They come to the table saying, we want this. We want X, Y, and Z. We won't allow you to slander us in this way. We're not having it. Yet people in our community, we still call each other nigger. We have no problem deriding, degrading ourselves. Look at our music. Look at some of our shows. Look at some of our entertainment. So I believe we've squandered that legacy, and there's just another group behind us saying, all right, y'all left it there. We're going to pick it up and do something with it.
Well, to be fair, you have to look at the economic base that they actually come to the table with. You have a number of white and Jewish homosexuals. You have a number of white and Jewish homosexual millionaires and billionaires. You have them in positions of powers within the media. When has the black community ever had any of that?
What does that have to do with being able to with how you comport yourself and how you list, quote unquote, list your demands in a certain fashion that you're going to get heard?
No, I mean, this is an entirely false equivalency, because being gay has never stopped anyone from voting. Being gay has never stopped anyone from eating in a restaurant wherever they want, going into any venue they want. Being gay has never caused people to be held against the street with fire hoses and have dogs attacked on them just for marching, because no one has ever stopped the gay parade through going through Hollywood. So to equate that with the struggle of the civil rights is absolute madness to me. Absolute madness, because that is to oversimplify the struggle of what civil rights meant. Civil rights wasn't just about one thing. I mean, you're talking about the abolition of Jim Crow laws which counted African Americans as second class citizens. Being gay has never stopped anyone from doing anything in the largest sense of it.
So then we have to define what we mean by equating it, conflating the two issues. Are we comparing the struggle? Which, to your point, maybe that's different. But I think when you suppress someone's civil rights, it doesn't matter if it's because I'm black or gay. There is an equivalency there.
I disagree. What civil right are we talking about? Are we just talking about getting married? Because there is no other civil right that they are being held from.
Getting married. There was a case about. I mean, it goes from the ridiculous to the sublime. We're talking about getting married. We're talking about being able to bequeath your estate to your partner. We're talking about health.
Well, you can do that with a will.
Yeah, you can.
That's what I'm saying. So again, this just boils down to just being married, and that's how we're going to equate this to civil rights?
I think there's more. I mean, I don't have anything to prove what I'm saying right now, but I'm just saying I read and I hear. And I'm hearing some of the issues that they're saying that they don't have rights, they don't have access to the same rights that heterosexual couples do. It's my understanding that you cannot, a homosexual partner cannot be on his partner's health insurance if the one partner is the subscriber of that insurance plan.
Well, let's get on the Obama plan. But anyway.
Well, actually, I think that might be a test. I mean, I haven't, but aren't you allowed to add people to your plans?
Not
last time I checked.
Not necessarily.
I mean, not as a spouse. That's the key.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I think with Mo Kelly, were you about to jump in and say something?
Yeah, all that is true. You cannot have you need to have your spouse to be able to come into the hospital to visit you. I concede all that. I acknowledge all that. But not all fruits are the same, okay? Some is an apple. some are oranges, and I'm not trying to be funny here. Just because they're in the same family and the family of civil rights does not mean they're equitable in nature. There was never a time in this country where they were lynching gay people once a week, officially, not even talking about the unofficial numbers. There was never a time in which gay people could not buy property in certain neighborhoods. There was never a time in which gay people, as Twala said, could not vote or had to prove that they were literate or had to pay a poll tax. Not all civil rights struggles are the same. The suffrage movement was only about white women. It was civil rights, but it's not comparable to what African Americans had to do to get their right to vote. And the abolitionist movement was only about ending slavery. Yes, they're all quote unquote civil rights, but they're not all equal.
Yeah, there are levels to this. I would have to agree. And when you break it down in some of the examples, you know, we went from a very extreme place to, it's almost like somebody fighting to say, well, hey, I can't go to the store. You know, I mean, actually, no, they can't even say that. It's just like, I can't get married. But I mean, they're passing the laws, but it's not like you're getting killed. It's not like you have,
right.
the entrance doesn't say straight and gay, you know, white or black, right?
What was that? Now I'm representing the East Coast here. I'm in Philadelphia, but I used to live outside of New York. I have, and I've told my fellow podcasters in the past that I was hired by my church, Riverside Church in Manhattan, which does have a gay ministry. I was hired a few times to videotape the gay parade. They had a float in the gay parade, so I got a little history lesson. And it's my understanding that, now maybe this is just one incident, but I'm sure if there's one, there's more. Of the Stonewall riots, where gays were attacked for protesting, and there was something I want to say from, I remember from watching the movie Milk, in the Hyde Asbury, maybe one of you guys might remember this on the West Coast.
Yes, there's been violence against homosexuals and people who are trying to protest for same-sex relationships. But if you want to make that equivocation, it pales in comparison to the daily violence of bombing churches in which children were killed. It pales in comparison to just getting shot on your front lawn like Medgar Evers. We were killed, and I'm not saying this assuming that you don't know, we were killed simply for existing, for walking down the street, for being lied upon as far as whistling at a white woman. I'm one of those people, I bristle when I hear that comparison and equivalence of this civil rights movement, the gay civil rights movement, with the African-American modern civil rights movement. I understand that one may lead to the other, but not one is comparable to the other.
And my opinion on that is I don't begrudge you. And as a matter of fact, I applaud their ability to have advanced their agenda. And I'm not saying that in a negative way, but they've advanced their agenda as far as getting proper representation and getting their same-sex marriage to the point where it is legal in 26 states, I believe. It could be more. However, to me, it's like, why – I feel like the fact that they mentioned this is equivalent to the Black Civil Rights Movement, it's like their way of shaming us that you should be helping us. You ought to be helping us. This is the same thing you struggled through. And I think that's just unfair to throw that at the African-American community.
Oh, it's wholeheartedly unfair to say something like that. That's almost like saying like, you know, they're calling us niggers too. It's like, huh? Like, wait a minute. Don't try to rile us up and get us behind you by trying to equate your struggle to be recognized as married couples for the right to be recognized as a full human being in society. You're out of your mind.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to admit this for the first time. I don't know of anyone who is doing what you just accused them of doing, Ampu. What gay contingent is saying Black people should get behind them?
If you do a Google search, a number of articles, you will see the people, Black, white, across the board, making this same statement that the African American community should be supporting the LGBT communities' right to get same sex marriage throughout the U.S. And I'm not saying that they're totally wrong, but don't shame us by saying it's the same as the civil rights.
That shame? Again, with This is the pain that is inflicted on us. We cannot get rid of our own wounds. Why do you feel like they're shaming you? They're just asking for your support.
Well, no, they're stating that this is the same, that you should do this, that pretty much that the same thing that you went through, you should be helping us achieve as well. And it's like, but the problem being that I have with that is that we're still going through that. And I'm not trying to be funny and I'm not trying to be mean spirited, is that the only way I know that you're gay and that you're being subjugated in any manner is if you announce that. I walk into a room.
You don't have to.
I drive down. I don't have to. So
you just said when you saw Tevin. I know what's up. You don't have to.
Wait, hold on. I didn't say that. I actually said he came out. That was my question. That was a question.
Know good and well everybody that's gay does not have to announce it. Okay,
that's true. That is true.
But there's a lot of gay people we don't know they're gay because for fear they have, rightfully so, that their livelihood could be in danger or whatever. So, I mean, they're
Jason
not
Collins.
But, you know, we're going to end this. But, you know, I think what he was saying is somebody's trying to provoke you to have compassion for something because they're playing on your emotional ties to what you went through. Like, that's supposed to push you into want to be a support of this. And that's kind of wrong, right? You should do it because it's what you honestly think you need to be behind, not because to say, hey, you went through it. And we're going through the same thing, so you're supposed to come over here. You look crazy if you don't come over here and get with this, because that's what y'all went through. So
right.
Let me ask you this then, real quick, not to get off topic, but I'm just curious to get your guys' opinion. During the 2012 presidential campaign, when I think it was at that point when Joe Biden spoke to, I forget what group he spoke to. It was an African American group. And he said, the Republican Party will have you back in chains.
NAACP.
Okay, did that offend you?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's foolish talk, man.
Like, okay. Why would you even go to, first of all, you know that's not going to happen. So why would you even use that type of imagery? You got to get on our side. No, damn well, you going back to Whiteyville, white state, and going to live without even giving a second thought to any issues that we're dealing with.
All right, so there we go. We spent some time on homophobia in the black community. Mason got
there was one other thing that
real quick
that I wanted to call
it. We got an hour, so we gotta really pack it in.
Okay. Well, there was a statement where you said that the reason why that Twala and Mokelly stated that one of the issues of why the largest new cases of HIV among black women was because of the homophobia in the black community that is keeping black men in the closet that are having sex with other men as well as with females. And I call BS on that as well.
I disagree with that.
Which part?
I know personally a woman who got infected by a guy who was doing that type of deal.
Well, it could be totally true, but I don't believe that it is the fault of the black community being homophobic that this has happened. It is sexual irresponsibility amongst not only these black men, but these black women.
It goes to, I have a very good friend who is who's a pretty big head honcho at the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, who deals with this daily, who deals with men who are, whether they are bisexual or gay, who are not being honest with women about their relations and even coming to her and saying, hey, you know, or are being diagnosed as having HIV and AIDS, who are also having relationships with women. Is it that so if these men were straight and saying, hey, ladies, especially African-American women who right now are the fastest growing and the largest number of people being infected with new cases of HIV. By who? Men? Men who are doing what? Sleeping with other men is where this is being contracted by on their end. So to say that the homophobia is not a problem, that's like you're not acknowledging the fact that you have men who are gay and bisexual sleeping with straight women and not being upfront with them about their past or about their alternate lifestyle, because they're not giving women the option to say, whoa, wait a minute, let me check. And true, I do acknowledge that this is also goes into the irresponsibility of protection and all that. But you have to look at the correlation between gay and bisexual men contracting HIV and infecting heterosexual African-American women. Why is it that these men are not out and open with who they are for women, unless you're saying that all these women are just totally like, well, I couldn't see, you know, he was obviously gay and I knew that. That can't be the case.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of think it would be more of the irresponsible, but I mean, I think that they're all related. But I just think at the end of the day, responsible acting people would say, yeah, hey, you know what? I have other sexual partners. Well, you wouldn't have all these other sexual partners.
Yeah.
You know, but again, it's interesting to me that, again, to me, it's like men are just generally more aggressive or more into sex. And so as we would probably have a lot of sex with different women, if you were gay, you'd probably have a lot of sex with a lot of dudes. And, you know, the power of the P may be pulling some of these dudes to go both ways, which I can acknowledge and understand. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. That's a tough one. We're going to shift gears because we got a few more minutes left, and I wanted to get into a little more lighthearted things here. And I want to read this, and I'm going to go specifically to Big Sexy, Mo, and Tawala, because I do know the opinions of Aunt Pooh and Q on this. I'm going to read this quote first, and then you think you understand what I'm saying. Here it is. It says, loving this energy. Elba, fall back. I got this. I am fully committed to suiting up for this adventure. Now, this is Tyrese. He posted this on, I think it's Instagram or Twitter the other day or today. He's talking about being Green Lantern. And he's actually name-checking Idris Elba, you know, saying, hey, let me get this role, sir.
They don't want him bringing Weebay on him. You better leave that alone.
Hilarious. Big Sexy, can you see Tyrese Gibson as being Green Lantern in either in the Green Lantern movie or maybe possibly the Justice League movie?
No.
Why not?
Because Tyrese Gibson, now, again, I already have my opinions of him as an actor, which are not very high. I think the character John Stewart is a military type dude, a very, not straight laced, but a very serious cat. And every time I see Tyrese, and first of all, he doesn't have the physical stature either. But
yes,
every time I see Tyrese, he's, you know, doing that nonsense he does in Fast and the Furious or playing the role in Baby Boy, which I thought was drivel. I can't see him bringing any type of gravitas to that character at all. No, I think that's a mistake. Now, it would draw because of the name. Yeah, you get name value. But as far as him playing that character, no. No way.
I completely agree. I mean, when you look at Tyrese, even from his role in the military capacity in Transformers, he still had to bring the jokey jokes. John Stewart is not about the jokey jokes. John Stewart is a very serious cat, even within the Green Lantern Corps. He is probably, you know, he is one of the most respected Green Lanterns because he holds true to the cause and the mission as a soldier. He brings that with him to being a Green Lantern. Even, you know, he surpassed Hal Jordan as far as his importance to the Green Lantern Corps because Hal Jordan was like, yeah, I got this. But Hal Jordan maintained his wit and all that. John Stewart was more like maybe Sinestro in that he was like, this is serious business. I'm not here to play. I'm here to police the universe. And that is something that Tyrese could never, never in his life even hope to carry.
Well, I will throw in his defense, there is the movie Annapolis starring Tyrese and James Franco.
And how many people saw that?
Well, regardless of how many people saw it, I'm just saying there is an example of him playing my opinion, I think he's playing a very serious sort of drill commander type of guy in that. So, I mean, he's done that kind of stuff, but
I'd have to see it because you're naming probably the one thing I haven't
sure.
seen him in.
And yeah, it wasn't a big movie.
Most people haven't seen him in.
Yeah, it did not do big. I don't think it did big at the time, but it was Touchstone Pictures. I mean, Disney put it out. But anyway, so, you know, he has done that sort of stuff, but I'm curious. Mo Kelly, what do you think?
Real simply, I think most people have touched upon everything I was going to say, but we really don't have an example of a film in which Tyrese carried the screen or a movie by himself. Everything we've talked about is more ensemble, or he had an equally billed co-star. Tyrese doesn't have, to use a word already used, that gravitas, that type of on-screen presence, which would – and let's talk about these superhero movies.
Mm-hmm.
The ensemble ones are a collection of individual movies and characters who can carry their own weight. if we talk about the Avengers, we know that Iron Man can carry a movie by himself. We know that Captain America can carry a movie by himself. Conversely, if we talk about the Justice League, we know that Superman can carry a movie. We know that, hopefully, Wonder Woman. We know that Batman can. But I don't know that Tyrese as Green Lantern, Jon Stewart, can carry a movie by himself. There's no evidence of it, so I don't think it would work on any level.
Yeah. See, the thing is, we, you know, using the argument that you got, someone could have said that. What's my guy who played Star-Lord?
Chris Pratt.
I would have said he couldn't carry a movie because he's never done that before. He's been, I think, as a TV guy, and he was an overweight kind of guy, right? I mean, they can get these guys. Most of these cats that are now the stars of this movie didn't really come from the background of doing. Carried a movie like the guy who plays Captain America. Like, I love him. He's dope. But to me, that first Captain America, he barely carried that movie. Like Captain America carries it when they come out of the Avengers. Now he's the man. And I'm loving
it. When you look at Captain America, the film carried itself. When you look at Chris Pratt for Guardians of the Galaxy, the character that he plays in Guardians of the Galaxy is almost the same character that he is on Parks and Recs.
Okay.
So it wasn't that much of a stretch, and Guardians of the Galaxy for Marvel was a gamble that they wholeheartedly believed in, because when they saw the final cut, they said, oh yeah, people are going to lose their mind. But it was a gamble for them.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Captain America, just on name recognition alone, all Chris Evans had to do is show up on set.
Sure.
And that because they knew that film was going to be part of a larger cog. When you look at Green Lantern, which is coming off of the heels of a horrible outing with Ryan, whatever his name is,
Reynolds.
That's a whole lot to live up to.
And I agree with you. But I think, and I'm only going to assume, I want it to be, I assume the Batman versus Superman is going to be a successful movie. And it's going to come off the heels of that, and maybe Suicide Squad will come out after that. And I assume it's going to have this sort of universe that it's had built up, and our expectations are, okay, DC can put out something. And again, it's Green Lantern. And some level, Tyrese just has to show up. I mean, he does bring with him the Fast and the Furious sort of audience and people that do sort of like him. He does have a following. I think he could do it. I agree, though. Looking at it on just off the top, I wouldn't have had him as my first pick. But I know with some of these movies, a lot of these guys I wouldn't have had as their first pick either. But, you know, with all the different circumstances that helped them be who they are in these movies, I could see him doing it. Now, when he name checks Idris Elba, me personally, I'd prefer to see Idris do it. But I know he plays in the Thor movies. So I don't know how reality that is.
I said it yesterday. It should be Will Smith. It should be Will Smith.
Will Smith could do it. I agree with that. If he wasn't already doing the role in what is the Suicide Squad, Will Smith could have done it.
Yeah, been three.
I'm Will Smith overload right now. like I said on the show before, I just don't like the fact that there are only like a handful of black actors that we all want to go to when there's a black role that comes to the table. I mean, it's got to be. I know Hollywood is not in the business of nurturing black talent, but come on, at some point we got to say there are other actors out there looking to get a shot.
Yeah,
but you're not going to go with an unknown on this, are you?
Well, there are other actors that they're out there that are not necessarily unknown. I'll say it again: the brother that was in he was in Nonstop and The Great Debaters. I think he's a good talent.
Oh yeah,
Nate Parker.
Nate Parker, that's him. Yeah.
Oh, Nate, you know what? Nate Parker would kill the Jon Stewart role.
Thank you.
He would kill it. You are right. He has the gravitas. He would actually.
Is right. Did y'all hear
would kill it?
Did you hear it?
Yeah, we heard it.
Michael Dean, please edit that out. Or we'll never hear the end of it.
These guys work in broadcasting, as I do. Thank you.
Oh, Lord. Here we go.
You know, Q, a broken clock is right twice a day, man, unless I get carried away.
Hilarious.
About 4 or 5 days.
All right. The other thing I wanted to just get some opinions on is Marvel's comics universe. It's about to get shooken up pretty big here next couple of months. I forget what they called Secret War. They're going to call it Secret War. And I think last week they did a press conference where they released a video, and it shows Battle World, where they're going to put some of the more classic storylines from the past, and they're all sort of converge together and battle each other. And somehow, at the end of this, I imagine we will have a new Marvel Universe that supposedly may combine the Ultimate Universe with the current 616, smash them all together, almost in a crisis style. Tawala, what's your opinion on this? Is this a failure? To me, it's a failure of creativity.
This is, and I wholeheartedly agree with that, but as a longtime collector, I look at it like this. I have probably three, maybe four long form boxes holding comics that I bought over 2014 that I have yet to read, because it got to the point where the storylines were so convoluted and so silly, and the tricks of doing those crossover stories where, oh, you have to read this story to follow along and see what's happening with this other story over here. It got to the point where Marvel had just lost it. It's like the creativity had almost stalled. So I look at this as Marvel saying, F it. I am going to start from scratch. And the only way to do that is to end everything people know. We can't end one thing and keep another thing going. We have to start this entire thing over, which, if they do it like DC did with 52, could return rights to a lot of properties to them, because that is how DC was able to swindle away Superman and Batman, by changing their origin stories just enough so that they could say, hey, we no longer have to really, you know, talk to, you know, the creators of Superman or Batman anymore. Because it's like, well, yeah, we're using the characters, which we have gained rights to, but we're not using your original story anymore. So kick rock. Marvel can now do this by saying, you know what, let's put everyone into a bucket, stir them up like gumbo, we'll keep who we want, we'll recreate Spider-Man's origins, or we'll relaunch this in a way that we can say, F you, Sony, we're not doing the Peter Parker Spider-Man story. We're changing everything. You guys got that. Go jump in a lake with that. Because like when you look at it in the Marvel Ultimate Universe, the X-Men, the mutants were a creation of the government. It's not a natural mutation and all that. Wolverine, all those things. Wolverine, I believe, was like one of the first test subjects that they implemented this mutant virus. But all of that changes in the Ultimate Universe. The origins of all the characters change. And if they can say, hey, let's maybe take some of these characters we don't have the rights to, redo their stories and bring them back into the Marvel universe proper, well, then, hey, we trump everybody, which is what I think they're doing, because that's why they're killing off Wolverine, Deadpool, Fantastic Four, all the characters that they want back into their fold that are owned by other properties who own the rights to those original stories. So they can say, good, Fox, you can have Fantastic Four as you know it. We are going to go in an entirely different direction so that when the license runs out on what you own, we're good to go. We don't have to have any more conversations with you.
So do you think Marvel hold on, Ant, real quick. Do you think Marvel will have the balls to introduce the Miles Morales Spider-Man to the movie universe?
I pray so.
I don't think it's a question of balls. I think it's just a question of exposure. I mean, granted, you know, we comic guys know who Miles Morales is, but the problem that I see on the horizon is, and this happened back in 92, or actually about 95 or so, when Marvel acquired the Malibu Ultraverse line. They integrated that line in the Marvel Universe, and then it disappeared. DC did the same thing when they took over Wildstorm. They integrated into DC, it disappears. Now, other than Bendis being behind Morales so strongly, the minute Bendis' name was not on that book, then I want to see what happens.
That's interesting. I can agree with that, and I think they have some pretty serious plans with the Miles Morales Spider-Man. Like when he will be introduced through the Marvel Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon soon, and there has been talk saying like, hey, We want to try to develop something more significant with this character. Like, he is the one character that Marvel Animation is super excited about introducing to kids through the cartoon, in the hopes that it will catch on. Now, again, that's in the hopes that he catches on. But when it comes to Spider-Man, quite possibly I had gotten off of that book for a while and got back into Spider-Man through the Ultimate Universe. And when they introduced Miles Morales, there was such a joy in my heart for what that character meant for that title, for the way they carry that character. I'm like, this is what made me love Spider-Man in the beginning. This kid struggled. And I think that they tapped into something new instead of going back and constantly trying to rehash Peter Parker's origin, which I thought was very brave when they killed Peter Parker in the Ultimate Universe. Like, I honestly damn near shed a tear when I read that book. I was like, wow, that's how you go out with the character. And they're like, look, we're not going to bring him back. Maybe we'll introduce him to the Marvel proper Peter Parker. But Miles Morales, his journey as Spider-Man has been amazing. So, again, I just pray that they do something larger with him.
See, yeah. The problem, though, is, you know, you're going to have two Spider-Man running around.
Right.
That's the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Peter Parker, Spider-Man, I mean, that's Marvel, right? I mean, that's the poster child for Marvel. Yeah. I just can't see them. I can't see them replacing that. It would be a major move if they were to do that.
And I think Marvel's done this before. Because back in, like, again, you know, the mid to late 90s, they came out with second versions of Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America. And those, with the exception of War Machine, those other two guys didn't really catch on. True. So now you've got Luke Cage running around. But on the cartoon, you've got, like, and in Mighty Avengers, you've got, like, this teen Power Man guy running around. It's just too convoluted now. And if they want to do it, I think they need to leave the alternate universe where it is. I am not in favor of the merging at all.
And the other thing we got to remember, too, though, currently, Captain America is black. I mean, Steve Rogers still exists, but
Falcon, but he's not running around in the suit, though. That's the thing.
Well, you know, the modified sort of suit. But I'm in sense of, it's not an alternate version of Captain America. It's not, you know, it's the 616 book is a black guy, which is pretty interesting. Like,
yeah.
That's sort of, you know, the most Americanist, whitest character they got.
But again, I think Marvel is looking at it like this. When you go to the comic book store weekly, I mean, I remember it was maybe a few weeks back. I went on a Wednesday and I was damned. We were in there, you know, shooting the shit. And I was in there, I don't know how many hours. And in all the time I was there, there were quite possibly, I'd say, four, maybe five customers that came in. One who was just a looky-loo who didn't get anything. Me and the other, you know, four guys that bought books. Marvel has got to look at the fact that the comic buying audience is now individuals who are, I'd say, 30, 35 plus. There are no kids going into stores.
No.
So they have to look at it like those of us who have been collecting, like me, I've been collecting books since, what, 1982. And I've been nursing, I'd say, at the lowest, a $20 a week habit. So if you're going to keep people like me into the store who have gotten tired, sick and tired of these stories where it's like, oh my God, come on. That's like the reason I fell in love with the Marvel Universe, the Marvel Ultimate Universe, is because they ended characters. Mm-hmm. It was like, look, this guy's dead. That's it. And they moved on. They found a way to tell exciting stories by constantly ending characters. And I think they may have gotten ahead of themselves because they kind of, after a while, it's like, oh my God, what do we do now? But you have to change the paradigm in storytelling and say, we've got to find a new way to do this if we're going to exist as a comic publisher. And I think that's what this move speaks to, in that them saying, we're going to have to get some new blood in here. We're going to have to get some new writers. We're going to have to take a bold step while we can afford to. Financially, they can afford to do this because the Marvel Cinematic Universe has gotten legs of its own. Mm-hmm. So they're fine in that sense. But when it comes to printing books, like, you know, and I've talked to several comic shop owners who are like, man, it's almost time to close the doors here because people are not coming in here to buy books anymore. I got more people who are coming here to talk comics than to buy them. I've got boxes and boxes of comics from 1980, from all the way till now, that are worth almost nothing.
Right.
I could go to any store, unless I have, like, you know, if I want to give up some of my major collections, like the Brood Invasion or the Legacy Virus, or, you know, if I just want to say, here's the entire collection of a storyline, then they may say, okay, but then they're only going to give me pennies on the dollar mm-hmm. for the books. But every store I go into, I've traveled to at least 5-6 different stores one week just to say, hey, I've got a bunch of books from 1980. And they're like, sorry, unless they're gold or what is it, Silver Age comics, we're not talking to them. You know, you've got to go 70s at the latest, you know. And I'm like, wow, so you're telling me all these books somewhat. I have in storage are worthless.
I disagree with that somewhat. There are a lot of books published in the 80s that, you know, I would love to, you know, relieve you of if you had them.
It's an individual thing. Like, I've gone into some shops and individually they'll say, like, if you have, like, I have the original the first run of Todd McFarlane Spider-Man. They're like, oh, we'll buy that hands down. But then you look at, like, because I was one of those guys that when Image launched, I followed all of their books and I bought all of them. All those first, and they're like, dude, get those books out.
Yeah, I think you're speaking, it's more of the marketplace. There's probably no value, but in terms of individual collectors.
Yeah, individual collectors. Like, if I was to go on eBay, hey, I'm sure I could go to town. If I was to do that, I just was curious. Like, I'm one of those guys who's like, I'm still holding on to hope that there's some type of resurging interest in the value of comics. And not even that I would sell them. I'm just like, but there are a lot of books that I'm like, oh my God, dude, I've got to make some room. And I've got to just get rid of some of these books. I don't even know if I need to sell them. I just need to get rid of them because I've run out of room. I've got a storage facility and a garage full of books. And it's gotten to the point where it's like, damn.
I think we're in the last bastion of the actual printed comic book thing, man. It's dying. And the kids today, man, like, I was talking to my son real quick, and he's all into Marvel stuff. He doesn't buy comics. He's only 6. But I was talking to him on Skype. And he jumped on the screen. He had a Captain America shield on. And he said, Dad, he said, you know, Ultron broke this. And his shield was broken. I don't know, what did you do? And he said, Ultron's broke it. And I'm like, okay, what happened to this thing? And he had broken it. But he came up with this whole thing purely based off of, here's his source material, Avengers Assemble, the cartoon series. Like, he's watched the whole thing because it's on Netflix, right? And so he understands the story, and he saw the trailer for the new movie, and he's like, Dad, Ultron, you know, he broke it. And I said, well, how do you get it fixed? You know, what is it made out of? And my daughter was on the screen. She's 12, and she's like, vibranium. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I say, where can you get it from? And they both kind of look, and they go, Africa? And I'm like, yeah, Wakanda. And they're like, oh, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, that was on the cartoon, Dad. And I was like, yeah, watch that, because they're going to have that in the movie. And again, their whole introduction to it is purely based off of cartoons, you know, that they've seen on TV, because they don't, you know, they can't, one, they cannot afford the books, and two, the comic shop would be so far and few between. So I think the next generation of kids, and I think Marvel's smart, like, they have introduced a lot of this stuff early into those comic, into the cartoon series for these kids. And now these kids are ready and primed for this movie, and they have the background. They don't know the real true source material, but they know sort of the based on material that they have access to, and they're ready to go see those movies. And he had the Captain America shirt on. He had the shield. And then in his other hand, he had a Iron Man glove like he was, you know, doing the thing. I'm like, man, you're Avengers out. But I like that. I was like, okay, he's falling under tradition. He doesn't have the comic book experience like I did, and probably never really will. But he still likes the stories. He still has access to it. So that's why I think, you know, we're the last bastion of this comic book thing. And then, of course, with digital, I've switched to digital. You know, that's just it for me at this point. But everything is on here, though. You know, so I don't know. We're going to do one more. I'm going to go to Mo Kelly first on this. Another movie thing, another comic book related, another rumor that's coming out, Batman versus Superman. Now they are saying, rumor-wise, that Michael Shannon will actually somehow be in the movie. And the explanation is that his corpse will be retrieved somehow by Lex Luthor, or he is experimenting on it, and those experiments trigger the doomsday sort of DNA or geomone to come up, and so Zod is actually becomes the doomsday character in the movie.
Wow.
God.
Yeah.
This is a rumor.
Bullshit.
Yeah. Mo Kelly, what do you think about this?
This highlights the problem with DC. They got the animated properties down. They have it done right.
Yes.
Their live action, they can't get it together. I don't care about the latest rumor because ultimately they have no product in the marketplace. How Marvel is successful is each property propels the next one. And it's all tied together. The only thing we have to talk about with DC is a rumor. They've already pushed back Justice League, I should say, Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, to 2016. And they've already moved off their release date because they didn't want to compete with the next Captain America movie. They don't have any product in the marketplace. And they originally came forward saying that they're going to have the Wonder Woman movie with Gal Gadot. And that is not officially on any production schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So until they have actual product in the marketplace and there's a sequence and a continuum which leads up to this eventual Justice League movie, it means nothing. I can't get excited about it. And that's how Marvel, going back to the previous discussion, Marvel understands that they're grooming this next generation, not just the kids, but folks like me who weren't comic book collectors, who just have some general knowledge of the characters and are not tied to comic book dogma, who are willing to accept a Miles Morales Spider-Man, who are willing to accept a new Captain America in the sense of Falcon, who are willing to accept black superheroes in general, may not have seen it or been exposed to it as a kid, but now that's a part of our reality as far as what we see around us. And for all that we may dislike the idea of Michael B. Jordan playing the Johnny Storm, but it still primes the pot for people to see black superheroes. And in that regard, I'm fine with it. But going back to DC, I don't care about the rumors, not until they have actual product for me to view.
All right.
Let me state for the record, I don't mind Michael B. Jordan playing the character. What bugs me is the whole, we're going to be in these containment suits and all that horse shit. That's what my problem is with that whole deal with Fantastic Four. If you're going to stick to the core and change the race of people, I'm okay with that because they did that with the Kingpin and Daredevil. And I thought Michael Clark Duncan held it down. But when they came out, oh, no, we're going to do this and make, Dr. Doom like a hacker. Get the fuck out of here with that, man. No.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I wanted to be noted for the record that Fantastic Four would never see the light of day of a theater release.
Oh, here you go.
I'm saying that.
I don't disagree with that because it's almost gotten to the point where – we were discussing a story this week where Fox is rumored as saying that they've seen the film, and the reason that they have not moved forward with putting out any trailer, any even imaging for a film that's supposed to come out in August? Are you serious? They have not done anything is because they're like, look, we are debating whether we need to scrap this whole thing and reshoot it, whether we can even reshoot some scenes, because they're like, this is god awful. Remembering Josh Trank is young, and Josh Trank is also not a comic book guy. There are the members of the cast went on record saying he told us we don't have to know anything about these characters because he's not sticking to any of the canon at all. That does not bode well for a comic film.
What comic was it that they had the cast of the Fantastic Four film die in an explosion? Y'all, anybody remember that? It came out last year, and it was an end joke where all the cast members were sitting at a diner waiting for Michael B. Jordan to show up. Of course, the black dude is the one that's late. And there's a super villain that's throwing bombs into the city, and they get blown up.
This is in the issues?
I remember hearing about that, yeah. I don't know if it was the 80s, the 90s Fantastic Four cast, or the one from the early 2000s, or this one. But yeah, I remember there was actually a panel in a Fantastic Four issue where they got killed.
It was this cast because one of the dialogue bubbles said, where's Michael? Why is he late? They were talking about Michael B. Jordan.
Wow.
Oh, well, I missed that, but that's hilarious.
Marvel's clowning.
Yeah, it was killed in a Punisher issue.
That sounds right, yeah.
Wow.
when this bomb finally gets released online. Oh, excellent. When that bomb gets released online, I'm looking forward to seeing it because we all know it's going to be god awful. We all know this. And if it doesn't get a theatrical release, which it, you know, may not, someone will sneak it up online and we will see it. That's just the way it is nowadays.
Yeah. Was it Michael Vaughn? Is that his name? Matthew Vaughn. Excuse me. He had recently come out and said that if you like Chronicle, then you will like this. He said it's like Chronicle. So we'll see.
That's not a selling point.
It's not, but I know what I always see. We'll see.
Wow.
We'll see what happens.
Oh, nice picture of Jordan cheesing it up, too. Jeez, really?
All right.
So hey, man, he took two to the chest in the wire. He happy as hell right now. Let him be. He's like, do you know where I came from? I'm happy to be with these white folk.
Well, he did Fruitvale Station. He's doing his thing. Now, I will say this about the Fantastic Four. After seeing Whiplash.
Best movie of the
year. One, the one guy is in that movie and he's going to be in I'm curious to see what he's going to do because I thought he was really good in Whiplash, whatever. So we'll see. All right. Well, we are going to wrap things up. We gave you guys a lot to think about and listen. First of all, I want to get the listener's opinion on the homophobic issue. Leave us a comment on the page or on the Facebook page. I want to start some dialogue and see what you guys think. Also, what do you think about some of the movie news that we have presented today? Now, as we always do, we go around the room and give everybody a chance to let people know where they can find you. So I'm going to start with our guest first, Mr. Mo Kelly. Sir, again, let me say it was definitely a pleasure. We will have to do this again. Where can our listeners find you?
First, thank you. It was a pleasure being on Podcast Juice. You can always find me online at MrMoKelly.com. That's MrMoKelly.com. The show, The Mo Kelly Show, is Saturdays and Sundays emanating from Los Angeles on KFI AM 640. But we always post the shows online. It's a conversation that's broad and inclusive. And we discuss the issues that we've been discussing right now in a segment we call Nerdorama. We love to do all sorts of movies and politics from pop culture. I invite everyone and suggest everyone to come on in and join us. And it's executive produced by Tawala Sharp.
All right. All right. Mr. Tawala Sharp, where can they find you online?
You can find me online at Tawala, T as in Tom, A-W-A-L-A.
All right. Thank you for joining us, sir. Mr. Aunt Pooh, where can they find you?
Find me on Instagram and Twitter at Aunt Pooh. I have a new column up at knockoutnation.com, all hiphop.com, Breaking Kayfabe, and a new comic theme article at 41 Mania around 6 o'clock tonight.
All right. Mr. Big Sexy and Sack, where can they find you, sir, when you're not in the courtroom?
Just holding it down. Just holding it down. I can be found on Twitter under Big Sexy and Sack and on Facebook under Mark Wiggins.
All right. Mr. Q-Storm, where can they find you, sir?
You can find me at qstorm.com/lightningstrikes. You can find me on Facebook as Michael Jones. I actually just sent out a request to Mr. Sharp on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter at qstorm3476 and on YouTube, The Real R-E-E-L Q-Storm.
All right, ladies.
And I just confirmed you on Facebook.
There we go. Hey, we got online confirmation.
Now you're going to see how I really get down.
Uh-oh. Right off.
And for you, the listeners, you know we are in the midst of our Work It Like a Job Road to 7K campaign. So definitely go on to Indiegogo. Search Podcast Juice. We're trying to take this show to the next level. We definitely need you guys' help and support. So please, if you can, dig in. It is church day today, so this is me passing the plate around. But yeah, get behind that. Work it like a job. Also, you can always follow us on Twitter at Podcast Juice and on Facebook, search Podcast Juice. You know, like I always say, work it like a job. We'll see you next time. Peace.